Welcome to MGO HockeyCast 1.4. What are you doing over there, Anthony? Anthony, no, 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 you stay away. You stay away from her, Anthony.
Anthony, you have a big family, right? You have a couple siblings. Do you guys get together?
I do.
Yeah.
I have kind of an extended family as well because various marriages and divorces.
Sure.
My parents, so I do have siblings scattered throughout the country in this world, actually.
So have you ever been attracted to your sister?
I knew that's where you were going with it. And actually, I wanted to start off asking if you had a sister.
See, I don't have a sister.
I have a few, and I'm not attracted to
any of
them.
So you've never tried to kiss them?
No.
Have you ever... So then you would have never... tried to and been shut down by them.
No.
Because that almost has to be worse.
I don't know. I've never thought about that. That's something that I didn't really want to think about.
The last couple of weeks in the press box, your mind kind of wanders and you start thinking of these scenarios as you continue to watch leads disappear and goals go wide. And I can't imagine that the feeling is too dissimilar, right? That's where the saying comes from.
When hockey has gone badly, I've never thought about kissing my sister.
I didn't say that I have. I thought about like what you might do in those situations.
I know.
See, I don't have a sister. So, I also don't have a brother. Do you have a brother?
I have a brother, yes.
But he's too far away.
I just saw him a month ago and we did not kiss.
Well, that's probably good.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should move on to the hockey.
I hope.
You hope? So, Michigan plays Michigan State to a loss and a tie, and then that was last weekend, and then this just past weekend, the one that just ended, Michigan played Minnesota to a tie and a loss. And we went in at the end of our last podcast, we talked about how Michigan had four games coming up against teams that we thought that they speculated that they would be better than, and we said they needed 9 points.
Yes.
Or that they should get 9 points. 12 were on the table, but they should get 9 points. And they got 3.
Yeah, they came up a little bit short.
That's pretty short. 1 point, I was pretty down last weekend. 1 point against State in a home-and-home is not good. And then this weekend against Minnesota, so normally we'd sit there and we'd break down both of these series separately. But they were kind of the same.
In a lot of ways, yeah. And I remember you having that podcast with Brian, not this past one, but the week before, and
okay.
You sounded really upset after that, after the Michigan State season.
He really wanted to talk about hockey, and I was like, dude, we got to do this, and yeah, I mean, I'm going to talk about hockey, and we're signed up for more for the rest of the year, for sure, but...
Sad Dave is not good radio.
Is he good podcast?
I mean, it is. It's always good, but I prefer Happy Dave.
Happy Dave. Right? Yeah. I think somebody called me prickly after the Notre Dame game when I was sitting there. But I thought I was very positive. Brian asked me if I wanted to walk into the sea, which I don't really know what that means. And I said no, that I was too young. Although some recent events have maybe aged me a little bit in that regard. But
does
anyway.
Does it have to do with any ties?
Ties?
Uh-huh.
No, we keep this rather informal. We just wear sweatshirts.
All right, I'm out.
You knew that one was coming.
No way.
So basically, Michigan, the last four games, they take a lot of shots. They mostly dominate Corsi. They have the puck. Mm-hmm.
They dominate possession.
But the problem was that they would have numerous defensive breakdowns. So they'd play well a lot of the time, and then they would play rather poorly for little bits of stretches, and they'd give up goals.
Yeah, I do want to start and say that I've not watched Michigan this year and thought they played badly.
Badly?
Right. Well, I've never shut off a game being pretty disappointed or disgusted.
Okay.
There have been stretches where they've not played great. I think, actually, parts of the worst parts of their play this season were during the Penn State games where they kind of were getting down.
Yeah.
Right? So they survived those things. The record is not great, but I don't think this is a bad team, which sounds really weird and like, how do I put it, fanboyish, right? But
we could be a little fanboyish, just not.
I just don't think that's the case at all. When I watch this team, I don't really feel like they're playing bad. I don't feel like they're not executing what they're trying to do. I see that there's some fundamental issues, as we've discussed. But overall, and like I said, the results are not great at all, right? The two ties and two losses. They haven't gotten a win since the Friday night game against Penn State, so they're on a seven-game winless streak.
But the issue with that is that five of those six have been at home.
Yeah, and
that, like,
and we envisioned Michigan State and Minnesota being significantly worse than Michigan. I think what this has done, the last three series, I could throw in Wisconsin in there too, is kind of recalibrated me to seeing that, whereas Michigan's a little bit of maybe a half step below where I thought we were going to be.
Yeah.
I think that Michigan State and Minnesota are a little bit better than we anticipated. So I see the bottom four in the Big Ten being Wisconsin, Michigan State, Minnesota, and Michigan.
Yeah.
I see them being one big jumble, right? Rather than this team's better than the other team
and like,
or whatnot. That's just kind of how I've come away with it. And if you want to parse it certain ways, like Wisconsin might be a little bit better, Michigan State might be a little bit worse, but on any given weekend type scenario, I see that being a big kind of jumble right in the middle.
Yeah, we've seen all of those teams, and Michigan has basically played them all to just a bunch of draws. And they,
right.
You know, they'd win or they'd lose in overtime, or they'd give up a goal at the very end. Mm-hmm. They haven't gotten the goal at the very end to win. But so you end up with a bunch of draws and then losses. And, like, there's a couple ways you can go with this. You can say that, well, you know, they're not getting those home games back.
Right.
And that sucks, because mm-hmm. then now you got to go win in Madison, you got to go win in Minneapolis. But the other way to look at it is, if you really want to jump pairwise, mm-hmm. it's getting road wins.
Right.
And so you can't win on the road unless you play games on the road,
right.
And they're going to have plenty of opportunities to do that.
Yes.
And that's, you know, they could also lose these games, so it's not like a guarantee, but, you know, sweeping a series, if Wisconsin or Minnesota is off one weekend or they get a significant injury or something like that,
right.
You could jump numerous spots in pairways and be right back in it. And not to spoiler too much, because we're going to go through a little bit of like a team overall assessment in different areas in a little bit, but you know, Michigan's only 29th, so they're only 15 spots out of the tournament, or
right.
thereabout.
Okay.
So it's not that they've lost the season.
Right.
It's that there was a lot to be gained or a lot of ground to be held mm-hmm. that they kind of gave up.
Yes, but they're also in a better spot than they were last year.
Which is weird.
Yeah, because they were playing bad last year. And they were going through the transition, and honestly, looking back at it as we're getting more data, like they just hadn't really kind of grasped Mel's system.
Yeah.
And they haven't really kind of came together as a team. Whereas this year, they are executing the system fairly well, I would say.
Yeah, I think that they're doing what they're trying to do. I wouldn't say that pucks are always going in the net.
Mm-hmm. Right, we should address that, because I think the last, you know, four games, which is the kind of the crux of this podcast,
yeah,
have all been very similar as what you're saying. I do want to kick off by saying I don't really think that Corsi and possession mean a whole lot in the sense, Anthony. No. I don't mean that your efforts are wasted.
Don't read my things, guys.
I don't mean that your efforts are wasted. I think that evaluating the team based on it is going to lead us to this level of confusion. Is like, why aren't they doing so well? They're fifth in the nation or fourth in the nation in possession.
Right.
Why doesn't the record result, you know, kind of match that? Their PDO is pretty low. So it's the shooting percentage versus plus save percentage, you know, minus 100 or whatever, like 100 minus
okay.
shooting percentage plus save percentage. It's below, it's like 95 right now or
okay.
something like that, which is very, very low, which is an indicator of very bad luck. But we watch these games, we don't really think they're that unlucky.
Right? No.
Right. These results are somewhat justified. I wouldn't say mostly. Maybe they've gotten a bounce or two here or there. But overall, in general, I think kind of the record matches the game-by-game results.
So one of the things that we look at, and when this, again, kind of tipping and probably transition into it, but as we look at kind of drafted players,
mm-hmm.
and that'll give you kind of a view of like what their roster looks like and
right.
how talented it is.
Uh-huh.
And Michigan does have a decent number of drafted players.
It is, yes.
The weird thing is that about half of them are on defense.
Mm-hmm.
And so after the first line and a half comes on the ice for forwards, there's no drafted players.
Right.
And they're all super young.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's maybe a junior, but it's mostly freshmen and sophomores that are not drafted that are almost all overage, except for
right.
maybe one or
so
two.
So lower ceiling, higher floor, lower ceiling.
So you're just not getting anything from that.
Mm-hmm.
It puts a lot of pressure on the top line. Top line's right. performing admirably.
Yes.
The second line is maybe a slightly below what you would like, but then there's pretty much a cliff And, you know, you can't expect a line or two to be pouring in four or five goals a night.
Especially in a conference like the Big Ten. I don't think the second line had as great of a last four games as they did the prior four. You know, like the Penn State, Wisconsin
series. The Penn State series was probably inflated a lot of people's numbers.
Well, right, but they still
scored the goals.
They're still actually being able to do what they were trying to do. Right? They weren't able to get Becker the puck as much the last 2 weeks as they had the prior four, so it might be a scouting thing. Teams might be figuring out what they're trying to do. But they've been swapping out Michael Pastulov and...
Yeah, he's dropped to the third line, and this last weekend
a little bit of shuffling.
Warren's played on the second line, I think.
Yeah, so they've tried Randall, they've tried Warren. I think they tried Lambert.
Olmstead, I think.
So there's a little bit of shuffling going on there, but so they haven't found that solution for second line. And as you and Brian were saying on Sunday, that's really more or less what a third line should be.
Yeah.
On a really excellent, you know, national championship contender type team, which is what they were last year. And we talked about this last year. That line would be an awesome third line for 4 years. That line is thrust into second line duties this year, and it's a little bit harder. They're not going to be as effective because they're going to be facing tougher competition. And then the two lines below them are, you know, need to step up and perform. And honestly, their bottom six lines aren't really producing a whole lot at all. Morgan's got a couple goals, but it's just really not what they need to sustain, you know, the level of performance that they need to get these wins instead of ties or close losses. Their goal differential now, I think, at even strength is 34 to 44, so they're minus 10. That's like, I think, a 43%-ish.
Not good, right?
No, it's not good enough.
Yeah.
And that's not what you want to see from a team that's aspiring to make the tournament. And that's basically what's materialized the last 2 weeks. They've played in seven straight if you look at the Penn State series. And they've all been really like close at the end of the games. Michigan has been directing a lot more shots toward the net, but pucks have not been going in. Part of this is system to me. Part of this is talent level. We've already addressed talent level. I think system, I touched on it last podcast a little bit, where they are constructed, I think, offensively and a little bit transition-wise to not allow big chances. And we can get into the defensive side of it because they do allow big chances defensively. But offensively, they're taking a lot of shots from the corners of the points, the blue line, where the blue line meets the boards. Those are low percentage. They're going for tips in those situations. I know that aside from the Becker line, they're not working out from behind the net a whole lot. They're working from the sideboards a little bit, or the half boards a little bit with the Norris-Slaker line.
Right.
But overall, it's an offense constructed not to allow a ton of transition opportunities. They do occasionally a little bit. I think Boca got caught on one of the...
they gave Minnesota him up this weekend.
Goals. Right. That was unusual, though. And I think a little bit had to do with Minnesota's depth, which we can get into.
Yeah.
But overall, the team offensively and transitionally, I think, is constructed to minimize chances against. And when you do that, combined with the fact that they don't have a lot of high-end talent, you're going to get these kind of results where you're going to kind of dominate possession. You're not going to allow a ton of transition chances, which they don't.
It was very weird this weekend.
Right. It's defense by offense, so they're not allowing a lot of chances in general because the puck's in the other team's end all the time. When it goes well, you suffocate Notre Dame like they did that one game. When it doesn't go well, you're just batting the puck around back and forth in the other team's zone, and then they score on a couple of transition goals and you lose.
Yeah, we've also seen.
Right. So that's the tightrope they're walking all season. That's probably the tightrope they're going to walk next year, to be honest, and maybe a little bit the year after. But that's what we're looking at from this team. And it's fine. I think it's an excellent coaching job, the way that the team is constructed. I think it's fine. It's probably not going to win them a national title in the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
Right? But at the same time, stranger things have happened. But for what they have right now, it's probably the smartest thing. But that's what we're seeing every week.
Yeah, when you look at the roster, this is if you're going to try to be competitive, this is what you have to do.
Right.
One thing we talked about with the bottom couple lines as just kind of not having a whole lot there, and there's also been some shuffling in and out of the lineup with a number of different players, a couple guys that we've identified early on in the season and have only played inconsistently, I would say both of them, are Nolan Moyle and Randall. Mm-hmm. And we are of the opinion that they should both play because a little bit when we've seen them play, there have been some highlights that they've made. Moyle had a good game on Saturday. He created two or three chances. Randall has done well when he's been in, not necessarily from a point standpoint, but controlling the puck and trying to move it and moving well without it, I thought.
Right.
But those guys are 18, right? And they're significantly younger than a lot of the other freshmen, so they're the chance they have to jump and get better is still in front of them.
Right.
Whereas a lot of the other freshmen and sophomores, like Raby and Van Wy and guys like that, and Lambert, they're all 20-year-olds. So they're a lot of what they're going to do has been done, so to speak.
Definitely. And so, I mean, that's a safe approach, though, is you get the higher floor players, maybe lower ceiling, but that's the whole theory, is you're giving up less.
Yeah.
Right. Now, with Randall and Olmstead, they're probably going to make more mistakes as they get into the system.
Moyle.
I'm sorry, what did I say?
Randall. You said Olmstead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But it's Randall and Moyle.
Yeah, they're going to get into the system. They're going to make more mistakes. The upside's probably a lot higher. Mm-hmm. And it definitely is a lot higher. But then you have to live with the mistakes and the transition goals. In the meantime, it's going to be harder to win games, as the theory goes.
Right.
It's a kind of a give and a take. My main beef with it, if I had to have a criticism, is that if you're going to play defense in your own zone the way they do, you might as well play Randall and Moyle up front, right? Like, that's – well, because
they're setting up to be defensive, and they're still committing too many breakdowns.
They're still giving up enough breakdowns when they're playing. So Moyle's done well on the fourth line. Randall, I think, has shown decently when he's played, sometimes second, sometimes third line, if I'm not mistaken. I think he did have one game at the first.
Yeah, they moved him up a little bit, but...
Right, they both have a little bit of offensive upside. I do think Randall has good collegiate player offensive upside, i.e. he will be a core player, top two lines type player, sophomore, junior, senior probably.
Okay. Right?
So I do think he has good offensive upside. Now, the downside is they're not really playing right now. They're not getting that extra offensive boost and so forth. So that's where the growth is going to come from on this team, if it is going to come from in the second half. I think that's where the offensive upside is sitting. Maybe a little bit of Brendan Warren, who's only got 3 points this year, who's a third rounder.
Yeah, that's a little bit.
It's a little bit of a bummer.
I didn't really see that coming, because he was all right on that. Like, a few years ago, I think he was a freshman with Marotti and Calderon, remember, right, on that Connor team?
Mm-hmm.
But he was on that line, and they were solid. I mean, right, until they played North Dakota.
Right.
But for the majority of the year when they were making that run...
Looked like potential there.
Yeah. And then...
Played like a freshman third rounder. You know, had, like, I think 15, 17-ish points.
But I mean...
But he's pretty much plateaued
15,
there.
17 yeah, points. Right. Like, I would take that from him at the end of the year right now.
Yeah, he's on pace for, like, between 6 and 9, I think, at this point.
Yeah, so, and that's... And you're... I mean, downer. There's not many seniors on this right. team. He's right. the only senior forward.
Yeah. And so that's... I think that's where you might see growth the second half, is maybe if he starts producing a little bit more in line with his career. And
yeah.
maybe more in line with being a third rounder. They also don't activate their defensemen as much. So you mentioned early on they have four drafted defensemen. Quinn Hughes is the only one that really, really gets involved with the offense. Part of that is probably by design. You're not trying to give up a lot of chances the other way.
Right.
But you're losing out on some offense from some of your more talented players when you're not activating defensemen. So between all those things put together that we've been talking about, I think that's why you get the results that you get, where they're good enough to hold possession against a lot of teams, 57-ish%, I think. Is that what it is on the season?
Yeah, about 58, yeah.
Yeah, so that's really darn good.
Yeah.
Now, that's not equalized to their schedule, because their schedule is actually pretty poor.
Right.
So
and a lot of home games.
A lot of home games, poor schedule. You get last change when you're at home.
Correct.
But their results should be a little bit more in line with their Corsi. But at the same time, you watch the games and you feel, I've never left the rink thinking, man, they really should have won that one, or this is a bad result.
No, you walk away thinking
of a justified result.
They had a chance, but you weren't like, this was stolen.
Well, the system's set up to give themselves chances.
Yeah.
You know,
so they have a chance, but there's a difference between feeling, man, we had a chance to win, and, oh, we should have had that. Those right. are two very different feelings.
Yeah, they can't. If you watch a good offensive team, they're going to get into spaces where they have better scoring chances because they can put two or three really quick passes together.
Right.
The player's in the right position to receive the pass, turn another one over, and then pick a corner.
Yep.
We say pick a corner when we're in the press box. Like, this guy, we need guys that can pick corners. There's a little bit more to it. It's executing on a two-on-one.
Yeah.
It's on a zone entry, bang, bang, on a zone entry. You know, pass to the boards, pass out to the middle, catch a guy in one-on-one with the goalie.
Yeah.
They don't have the level of skill in a lot of positions to be able to make those two or three quick passes to get themselves in really good scoring position. There is a process to get in a scoring position. The other team just does not allow you to get there.
Well,
like, you
sure.
have to make a few. Right. And so I think that's where they're really struggling right now as well. I don't think it's a systemic problem. Like I said, the system doesn't do them any favors offensively.
But it's a safer one given where they're kind of playing to where they're drafted strengths are.
Yeah. Mel is, I think, doing an excellent job.
So yes.
This is I am very high on this coaching staff and the future of the program because of what they formulated this year.
Right.
There's no perfect solution to the problem they have.
Yeah, and the problem is more they don't have enough offensive talent.
Right. If the only nit I would have to pick is defensively, they've got to be a little bit more structured. If you talk about what Brian said, where Michigan State plays with six goalies, New York Rangers almost win a cup like that.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Like that's a very viable, real strategy. A lot of teams do employ that. I mean, people do complain about it.
And it's like, boring.
It's blocking a lot of shots. You built your defense around that. Michigan probably should do that.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Like, they should probably be blocking a lot more shots. Should probably be in a lot more lanes. They should probably be keeping other teams out.
They just don't have the individual speed and skill to go forward the way we've seen Michigan teams for the last two or three decades.
Right. If you want to pick, second period of the Saturday game, Minnesota wins that game in the final minute, right?
End of the third. Yeah.
Michigan dominated that second period.
Yeah, it was like 30-9 in Corsi attempts, yes. Which was, and I don't know if I've ever seen a discrepancy
and
like
quality
that.
Scoring chances was very high in the second period as
they
well.
They did have a number.
But if you look at the first and third period, it's a lot closer.
Yes.
And so Michigan played extremely well for 20 minutes and pretty good for the other 40. But if you're playing dead even and you're allowing teams to get into the slot for good scoring chances, I thought Strauss Mann played pretty well in that game and they still lost. Those are the kind of things you can't have. You've got to be able to take advantage of your possession domination and not allow a disproportionate amount of good chances the other way.
Yeah, you can't go, three out of four shots for to your benefit to end up in no goals or no positive net.
Right.
And so the other thing is, and we don't have to go too much into this, but I do think that goalies have played well against Michigan this year. Mm-hmm. I think that Morris played well when he was here. I think Robson had a very nice weekend. I even thought DeRitter played well last weekend against them. So it's not like they're not scoring against guys who are getting out of position, don't know what they're doing. They're facing solid goaltending. I mean, even if they're not playing well for the year, all these guys have come in. Jack Berry came in for Wisconsin, and the one game that we saw him play, he looked lights out.
Which is amusing because he was really bad last year.
Right.
I don't think it's a combination of both things, or a couple things. Number one, the best type of game for a goalie to play is when you're getting a bunch of shots from the outside. As a goalie, I love that. I don't mind having...
Where you can see them all.
I don't mind having a bunch of low probability shots because it gets you into the game. It gets you warmed up really fast. And once you get warmed up, you start making the bigger saves. So Michigan's style kind of plays into having goalies play well against them.
Interesting.
Personally, I believe that. And the flip side, when you're allowing a disproportionately high amount of scoring chances against, how are the Michigan goalies going to get warmed up?
Right.
So it's a bad scene the other way in some ways. So I don't blame Michigan's goalies so much. Yeah, it'd be really great if we had a high draft pick goalie.
Al Montoya.
Really good. Right. You know, or even if LaFontaine had developed and played really well.
Sure.
And he was a starter now.
Sure.
It would be really nice to have that guy. But for what they have and the way those players, the way the goalies have played this year is not bad. And anyone blaming the goalies, I think, is kind of missing the big picture. Not to criticize any opposing views, but I think that it's a very simplistic way to excuse a lot of the other things that aren't.
They have breakdowns on defense, and opponents have taken advantage of those. Right. Whereas Michigan has not necessarily, when they've gotten those opportunities, they haven't taken advantage of the other end, or the goalies have bailed them out and made like a superhuman save.
Right.
I don't think that Mann has been all world this year.
Right.
It's just that it's hard for me to look back at most of his goals and say, oh, he should have had that.
If most of your goals are coming from inside the house or inside the slot.
Which a lot of them are.
Right, or on rebounds. If he's stopping the first shot and he's not allowing goals from low danger areas, then you don't have a problem with goaltending.
Right.
And I don't think Levine's really done that.
It was early
Michigan
on.
State. It was the first Michigan State game where there was one where he came from goal line to the opposite hash mark.
Okay.
So he had to go all the way across the crease and didn't set himself in the right position and let a puck in, I think, under his arm or something. And that kind of was bad for a college goalie, like a high-end goalie. But at the same time, it was still a quality goal.
Right? Yeah.
Like they're not going to fault him for that. It's probably something he had to stop. But other than that, I mean, we're naming one goal out of the last three or four games where I was just like, yeah, maybe the goalie should have stopped
that. They're also not getting pounded on goals. So most goals they've given up has been four.
Right.
And
in the last few weeks.
In the last three or four weeks have just, so.
You've got to score goals to win games, and they're not really doing that, and they probably aren't going to. Let's be honest. There will be a couple weekends where they do score a lot of goals because those bounces from the net.
The tips are going to go in. Sure.
The greasy goals are going to happen. They're going to blow up once or twice. But from a long view perspective, this is probably what we're looking at for the next this season, next season, and probably part of the year after is what I'm guessing.
So the last thing I want to go through is, so before Michigan plays an opponent on Friday night, I try to tweet out like eight statistics that kind of look at the team that they're going to face as a whole. It just looks at different areas. Their Corsi, where they're in pairwise, their power play percentage, penalty kills, how many drafted skaters they have, what's their talent level, and do they have skaters that are scoring over, you know, 0.75 points a game, right. And then the goalie statistics. Mm-hmm. And I've not really done that for Michigan, so I just thought we'd run through them. We don't have to deep dive too deep into them, but just as sort of like a relating point so that when you see those like preview tweets and stuff, you can mm-hmm. see it. So Michigan is fifth in the nation in Corsi, which is great. And I feel like when you talk about their execution of their system, mm-hmm. that's the result.
Yes, they are doing what it's designed to be doing. They are getting a lot of shots towards the net.
So not only are they being well coached.
Large margins of shot differential, yes. in a lot of these games, especially against average teams.
Right.
They are doing exactly what they set out to do.
So they're being well-coached, mm-hmm. and they're executing it. Mm-hmm. The pucks just aren't going in for you. There may be some lack of talent, some mm-hmm. hot goalie, and some just, you know, you just don't get bounces.
Right.
In pairwise, they are 29th, which mm-hmm. is kind of what you expect, A, looking at this record, but looking at this team. They're about halfway. I mean, that's literally about halfway.
I watch the team, and I see a 30-ish team.
Yeah, an average team. Like
when teams come in the past, when Michigan's been better, and they've performed the way Michigan has the last 4 weeks or 3 weeks, they look like a 30-ish team.
Yeah, they're not getting shut out, mm-hmm. and they're not shutting teams out.
Right.
And they don't look abysmal, right. but they don't look great. I mean, they're just right. very, everything is kind of fine.
They're very consistent in that. So, like I said, I don't think I've seen them play really, really bad.
No.
Right? We haven't
it's just
seen
that they haven't played really well, except for maybe like that Notre Dame game that I thought they played really well.
Definitely agree. Yeah.
Their power play is at 20%, which is a huge jump from last year. Mm-hmm. They were in the mid-teens last year, right. kind of creeping up as it got to the tournament. And actually, it's probably dropped a little bit because they had a rough weekend on the power play.
Right.
And I don't think they had a ton of power play goals the last couple weekends either.
No.
So I know for a time they were pushing 25%. Mm-hmm. And so 20-25%, that's also coaching. Given
it's improvement, yeah.
What they had last year,
right? It's not where they want it to be, especially the fact that they have two surefire NHLers,
yeah.
on power play. But it's definitely an improvement, and that might be a place for improvement in the second half.
A little bit. Their penalty kill is at 81%, which, mm-hmm. given what did we see last year? They were at 74, 75 at some points.
Right.
That's you'd probably want to push mid-80s to a little bit higher.
Yeah.
But again, that's another place that they've improved, and you're no longer like grabbing onto the guy next to you every time someone goes in the box.
I do think that they might get a little bit better, but it's kind of probably destined to be in this area.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. Number one, their penalty killers generally aren't the best skaters.
Yeah.
Their main penalty killer guys, and you need to have really great skaters to put pressure on point and to really disrupt good scoring chances when you're killing a penalty.
Right.
They don't really have that. And number two, their goalies, as we've talked about, aren't really going to stand on their heads.
Yeah.
So we don't have that super athletic.
So someone takes an elite shot.
Right.
It's probably a goal.
Game-stealing goalie. So they're probably going to sit there. I may be a little bit better, but I think that's kind of where they're going to sit. I think power play's got a better chance to improve than penalty killing.
Drafted skaters, they have 9, mm-hmm. which sounds high. The thing about that is that 4 of them are on defense. So when you look at that and you think 4 of our 6 or 7 defensemen are drafted, you think they're going to be really good defensively and they're going to struggle offensively. And right. they have struggled offensively because after the first line, or maybe 2, there's very few, if any, drafted players. But they just haven't been locked down defensively. And that's what we kind of said in the season preview is with these returning defensemen, they need to be lights out. They need to be like old school Minnesota State or Harvard, like those schools that just played super suffocating defense, and it hasn't happened, and that's kind of what's cost them.
I do think another thing is they do have 4, I believe, top 3 round picks. So maybe no 5. I'm sorry.
Oh wow.
So they have Lockwood, Warren, Luke Martin,
right,
and then Norris and Hughes.
Kenton Hughes.
But Luke Martin and Warren aren't really, have not really performed up to their draft status,
right,
in their collegiate careers. So it might be a little bit misleading, right, where we were talking.
Okay.
A team with five top 90 picks, this, or 93 or whatever, how many teams are,
whatever, on, sure, top 100.
Right, are generally going to be a power team, but Michigan's in a little bit of a different spot. Now, there's only 10 first-round picks in the entire NCAA. Michigan's got two of them. But, you know, so yeah, there's a give and a take.
Yeah.
When we look at drafted players, you know, the cutoff really is top 90 for real difference makers.
Okay.
And it escalates when you get to the first top 15.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think we should temper our expectations. You know, it's citing, oh, they have 9 drafted players, they should probably be performing a little bit better. I mean, there's a little bit of a difference there. Now, Minnesota, one of the wild things about Minnesota, on the other hand, is they had a bunch of drafted players.
They had 12. Yeah.
No one higher than 76, though, overall.
Which
so they had the opposite problem of Michigan.
Their highest is a third rounder.
They had a bunch of depth, but no studs.
But no, yeah.
So if you were to combine the two teams, they'd probably be really amazing.
It's really funny. Nate Wells, who I interact with on Twitter a decent amount during college hockey season, and especially when Michigan plays Minnesota, and he DM'd me, and he was like, man, if you just put these two teams together, they'd be good.
Yeah, if you put Hughes and Norris on Minnesota, that team would be a national title contender.
Yeah.
You know, and so, or maybe Lockwood as well. Like, Michigan's top guys with the minute, you know, if you combine those rosters. But it was an interesting seeing the kind of
the inversion
of that. And I guess one more comment on the Minnesota series is I'm not excited about playing up there in the second half of the season because they looked like a team like Michigan did in the first half last year, whereas they were pretty slow in their system. So a lot of times on the weekend, Michigan was able to catch them on breakouts with their forecheck. Where Minnesota, their defensemen always look flat-footed. They didn't look really sure with the puck. And I think that's how Michigan was able to dominate them so much. They look like they're still going through that transitional period into Motzko's system. I do think the series up in Minneapolis in the second half will probably be a little bit more of a challenge.
Because it's
probably not going to be pure dominance.
More
from a possession standpoint.
And before last year, Michigan's never done super well there. I mean, just going back to the 70s even.
It's bigger ice also, like the whole thing.
Right. And that's, you know, that lends itself to what? Speed and skill. And that's something that Michigan's a little short on. They have really high ends of it, but then it's a drop-off.
Right.
They also have, so you also look at how many players are scoring. I just pick 0.75 points a game. I think one is probably, like, a whole point a game is, like, a little high, mm-hmm. and 0.5 is probably a little too generous.
Right.
So I try to take halfway. Mm-hmm. So how many skaters are getting about, you know, 3/4 of a point a game?
Right.
Michigan has 6, which is good. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something I don't believe that they had that last year. I think they were at 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. The difference is that after those 6,
it
kind of drops way off, mm-hmm. which is what we talked about, having a good line, mm-hmm. line and a half, and then
two defensemen and four forwards. So they only have 4 forwards over 0.75 points per game, and then the other forwards are, the highest is like 0.49.
Yeah.
So it's a very concentrated scoring depth.
So your power play, uh-huh. when that first line is out there,
right.
looks good.
Yes.
When they're not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's, you know, therein lies the problem with the team. And, you know, Hughes is performing extremely well offensively.
Yes.
I think he's one of the top players in the nation offensively. And so they are getting the offense in Ciccone the same way, but they're apart. They're pairs.
Right.
You know? And so they're not getting anything from the bottom four. And therefore, Michigan is a very top-heavy team.
Right. Their goalie numbers, and these are going to be not good, just to mm-mm. spoil that, but their GAA is 3.26 as a team. We went as a team. I think you and I both probably feel like Mann should be the starter. I don't think that it shouldn't be that Levine shouldn't play the rest of the year,
right?
But Mann is probably looked surer, I would guess, mm-hmm. and a little more consistent.
Their numbers are very, very close. But I think there's a little bit more upside with Mann.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we went with the team overall for these. So 3.26 is the team GAA, mm-hmm. and 0.878 is the save percentage, which is not good. Neither one of those is good. There is a little bit of a caveat, like we talked about, where Michigan has had the majority of attempts on net.
Mm-hmm.
When you have the puck the fifth highest in the country, that's going to mean that your opponent is not going to have the puck,
right.
which when they don't have the puck, they're not going to have the shots, and let alone then the shots on net. Mm-hmm. So you're just not going to have a lot of saves.
Right.
The problem there comes from that a lot of those shots have come from high danger areas. Mm-hmm. So like you talked about not getting warmed up.
It's the life of an early goalie.
When you have to then make a save, it's right. not like you got to make a save from the corner. You're making a save from inside the dot. Mm-hmm. And that's like, oh, okay, now real life is here right. where I hadn't seen a shot for the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's
a very mental game.
That's very tough.
Goaltending is extremely mental, and you get warmed up by making a lot of easy saves. And
yeah.
then you know, kind of it built. And to stand around for a few minutes while your team is, you know, kicking the puck back and forth in the other team's zone, and then have to face a tough transitional shot or, you know, something out of the corner or whatnot, and having to make a move and then make a save, or having to face a high danger shot right away, it's difficult. And I don't, for those reasons, I don't necessarily blame the goaltending. Like I said, it would be yeah. nice to have a drafted goalie.
Right.
But I don't, it's going to become a meme, and it's only going to propagate further as the season goes on. But I don't think this is a goaltending problem as it is a defensive systemic issue.
Right. I would agree. And these are not good numbers, and I'm not going to say that the goalies have played great, mm-hmm. but I also don't think that they've been as quote-unquote bad as the numbers have always borne out. All right, let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll look at a couple of one small tournament and then one slightly larger tournament that are going to take place in the next month or so.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458, or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
We now have a couple weeks off from Michigan hockey, which I think even Mel Pearson has said is a little bit needed, that guys need to get away from the game, get away from school a little bit, and just kind of relax.
It's Christmas break.
Yeah. And but as per usual, Michigan is in the July, which Great Lakes Invitational takes place somewhere between Christmas and New Year's. Sometimes there are good times for it. Other times it's poorly planned. But this weekend, this time it's on the 30th and 31st, I believe,
yes.
Sunday, Monday,
yes.
Down at Little Caesars Arena. And their first opponent will be the Michigan Tech Huskies. So
the revenge game.
I think they saw them last year.
I know. I'm just thinking about the revenge game Twitter feed.
Where
an NHL player gets traded, and they just talk about each other.
So here we go.
Yeah.
So we'll go through sort of the eight numbers we looked at for Michigan a little quicker. So they're 19th in Corsi, which is still good. Pearson was known for that when he was there, so you're still thinking that trend is continuing. They probably still play semi-similar style. They're 20th in pairwise, so they're actually pretty good. They're right on the bubble. You know, they're also in a conference that they probably can win or potentially win. I know Minnesota State's probably also good in the WCHA, but Tech is always usually in the tournament chases. They have a chance to win that tournament, automatically qualifying them. Their power play is slightly better than Michigan's at 23%, which is kind of where you'd want it, I guess, for the most part. Their penalty kill is a little iffy, down at 78. We saw Michigan there last year, and that was not a lot of fun.
Not good. It's good for Michigan.
It's good for Michigan if they can get, especially with their high-end guys that we just talked about.
Right.
They only have one drafted skater. Mm-hmm. And one guy that's scoring over .75 a game. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that there is a number of players around 0.5 points a game, though.
They did have a lot of scoring depth, it seemed.
So they have
great.
So they have some depth at okay rate, at an okay rate, but nothing that's super high end except for like maybe one guy.
Right.
But
between it was 0.75 and 0.5. They had a lot of guys in between there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then their goaltending numbers are slightly better than Michigan's. Again, nothing great, but .75 GAA is all right, and save percentage is .899, which is still kind of on the...
Not really great, but...
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a game. It's a one game, so you never know what happens.
It's a winnable game.
But Michigan looks like they could match up decently well. Probably should try to avoid that power play. But if they get some penalties, you never know.
They should aspire to beat this team, I think.
I think so. Definitely. I think that's... then the other team is that they could potentially see, that obviously they could also see Michigan State, who we've just talked about, is Lake State. So a team that they've already seen twice. Hooray. And their numbers are up and down from what Michigan Tech's were. About, they're 41st in Corsi, so they don't have the puck a whole lot.
Right.
And I think that was true when Michigan played them up in the Sioux earlier this year. They're 22nd in pairwise, so about where Tech is.
Right.
Same conference, which is good for them. Usually, the last few years, they have been maybe a bottom 10, bottom 20
They've
team.
Traditionally been a bottom feeder. Yeah. So they're having a good season.
So, at least so far, anyway. Their power play, 22%. Again, in that Tech range, slightly better Michigan, but still pretty good. And then their penalty kill is kind of where you'd want it, right? About 85.
It's good.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I know that – I remember last year, I think Notre Dame and Ohio State were up around 90, which to me seemed insane.
Right.
So they also have one drafted skater. Again, this is kind of what you're going to expect from a lot of WCHA teams that aren't going to get the high-end NHL talent, but will have probably some good older players. And that's, you know, they do have seven guys that are scoring at 0.75 points per game or higher, which that is some scoring depth.
Definitely. Yeah.
And then their goalie numbers are good. I would say these are legit good. Their GAA is at 2.19 and their save percentage is at 0.915, which is kind of the cutoff to really good, would you say, is when you get over, start pushing 92%.
Yeah. I think that both these teams are going to be very similar. And the only difference being that Lake State's going to may not have the puck as much, like we were saying. Although, you know, if you look at Michigan and Michigan State, this is going to be a very even tournament, I believe. Probably some close games, probably some good games in terms of competitiveness.
Yes.
There's not going to be a lot of high flying, probably not a lot of high scoring. But if you're going to go down there and you're going to see the games, which it's always awesome to go down to LCA.
Yes, that's true.
It's going to be... Especially for, well, both days you get to see both games. It's going to be two very competitive games, I would think. No matter who's playing who, it's going to be worthwhile, I believe.
And these teams usually travel, right? They come down decently well.
Yeah, Tech's got, I mean, a decent amount of alumni in the area. Lake State, I don't know, honestly. It's been a while. Michigan used to play Lake State at Dale Lewis.
They did used to do that series, which they don't do anymore. Yeah.
You know why, though, right? You know the story behind that. Mike Ilitch paid for Lake State's arena upgrade.
Oh, really?
The deal was they had to play it down at Michigan every year.
Interesting.
Until there was some kind of like length of time for that. Yeah.
That's pretty cool though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
I don't know what his connection to Lake State was, but I just know that.
So Michigan probably still comes into this mini tournament, quote unquote, as you might say, as probably the most talented team, probably the team that would be maybe favored. I know that hasn't been borne out the last few weeks, but they're still going to have definitely the most NHL talent. I mean, even against Michigan State, they didn't get the results, but they played. They have the people on the roster, although they may not because of what we're going to transition into.
Oh, yeah.
In the next part of the segment.
I totally forgot about that. Yeah, they will not have Quinn Hughes and Josh Norris for this tournament.
And where are they
always
going?
They're always missing their top players. They're going to the World Junior Championship,
which is something that you've followed a lot more in the last probably, 5 or 10 years?
Yes, my first year of really caring about it was the Montoya year where he was the MVP, and won. It was the first time USA ever won gold.
Okay.
So in 1998, I believe, the United States created the NDP, the National Development Program. It was originally located in Ann Arbor, Ice Cube here. It moved to Plymouth a few years ago when the Whalers left. They sold the arena to U.S. Hockey, so the USA moved their operations there. It's really good. They've done a great job with it. Mm-hmm. It's always been a nice arena. It was always good for Plymouth Whalers games, yada, yada. The great thing is what's done for the United States is made them competitive at this level of hockey, and it's really helped college hockey because it's a major feeder in collegiate hockey.
Right.
And in the NHL.
And especially in this area because Michigan's got a ton of kids from there. Mm-hmm. State used to get a lot of kids. They're starting to get them again with the Dan Cole connection. Mm-hmm.
It's developing coaches. So last year's OHL winning coach for the national team.
Interesting.
Yes. It's developing coaches, developing players. It's probably the top development organization in the world They put a lot of money into it. They're very successful. They dominate at the U18 and U17 level in tournaments.
And they're starting to get play. I mean, they've started to get players from all over the country now that are coming to play.
And they're
there.
That's hurt Michigan a little bit. I think the diversification of where the players are from. There used to be a lot more Michigan players on the roster,
so that they would want to go to Michigan or something like that.
But overall, it's been a fantastic thing for American hockey.
Okay,
I started following in 2004. They actually showed the final when they beat Canada on ESPN, I believe, which was a big deal at the time.
Yeah.
ESPN picked it up because it was so unusual. Michigan had or USA had never won.
Right.
Since then, they've been a lot more competitive. I think at this point, they've cemented themselves in the top five. I mean, they're favored every year. The favorites are typically Canada, Russia, United States, Finland, and Sweden. United States is actually, I don't know off the top of my head, but they're right there with Russia and Canada as far as most successful this decade. They won the year of the lockout when all the NHL players were actually playing. So Trouba, actually, that was Trouba's year.
Interesting.
Trouba's freshman year when they won that year. They've done very well historically.
And they won it a couple years ago, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, they've won gold a number of times. Like you mentioned the
first time.
They won
pretty recently. They won 2 years ago with Joe Cicconi.
Yes.
He was on their team. They did not win last year, but they've done pretty well.
But meddling is good.
They've meddled a lot.
Right? I mean, you finish top three, you want to win gold, but getting a medal in this tournament is an accomplishment.
Yes. Getting a medal is impressive, and they've done it six times this decade. So out of the nine tournaments this decade, they've got three golds and three bronzes, which is pretty impressive for a country that 20 years ago was a complete joke in this tournament.
Yeah.
And it's a lot due to the national development team. So the NDP is very valuable for Michigan because of recruiting, but it's also made the World Junior Championships a lot more of a watchable and enjoyable thing for hockey fans. It's the premier international tournament of the probably in the sport. So the Olympics don't really it happens every 4 years. Number one, those players don't train together as often.
Yeah,
and also it's really in flux right now with the NHL not wanting to go to Asia. The World Championships happen every year. It's a fun tournament, but it's only for players who aren't in the playoffs. And it's more
so
of a
European
thing. So
there's always a limited pool. This is like, if you're in this age group and you're any good, you're in this tournament.
And you're not on an NHL roster.
Right.
You are playing.
I mean, even then, like, didn't Trouba come back for one? Or didn't they? I feel like there was something where they let...
They'll let, like, so Philip Zadina's playing, and he's plays for Grand Rapids this year.
Okay.
Philip Chytil has played quite a bit for the Rangers, but he's in the minors right now, and they released him for this tournament. So it happens, but it's not really a normal thing.
Like,
Brady Tkachuk is not going for the United States.
Interesting.
Which is a bummer, but...
Yeah, especially after we watched him last year.
He smashed last year, and his brother was amazing when he played for London in the United States. So, I did want to talk about this. I think it was contractually obligated for me doing this podcast. I had to talk a little bit about it.
I worked some deals out with Brian.
But also, I think that as a Michigan fan, Michigan always has players in this because Michigan's been fortunate enough to get a lot of really talented players over the years. They had Jack Johnson, who dominated this tournament. Trouba was amazing at this tournament. I think Merrill went once. Kyle Connor actually did not go, which I'll get into a little bit, which is bizarre.
Yeah, and that was in the year that he was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Hughes, Norris, and Lockwood went last year, and that's actually where Lockwood got hurt in the outdoor game against Canada at the Buffalo Bills Stadium. So it's great for a Michigan fan to watch these players over Christmas. It does coincide with GLI a little bit, but game times won't be the same. I think this year, I don't think USA plays at the same time Michigan will be. But if you are a hockey fan, it is a great tournament. It's phenomenal. It starts on Boxing Day, which is January 26th, for those of you who aren't Canadian or British.
Or aren't into the EPL.
Right. And it ends usually, I think, the 4th or the 5th, like that's Friday or Saturday after New Year's.
So Hughes and Norris will miss the GLI, and depending on if and when they get knocked out, they could miss that outdoor game against Notre Dame on the 5th.
They did miss, I think, part of the series against
Notre Dame last year. At least the Friday game. I can't remember about the Sunday game.
I don't remember either. But yeah, so that is the problem. For those of you not familiar, this is a U20 tournament, so you have to be 20 years or 19 years or younger before the day of the final, I believe.
Okay.
So typically for junior hockey, the birth year is the cutoff.
Mm-hmm.
But for this, I think the day of the final is the cutoff. So it's 19 and under. So they call it the U20. So Hughes, Norris are eligible this year on the team. There's actually a few Big Ten players, which we'll go through.
I was going to say, so we talked about Michigan players, because now we've probably seen some of the players that are going to play for the U.S.
Evan Barrett. who is tearing up the NCAA right now, will be
with
a big
Penn State
factor on the United States roster. Arnie Tilvede, I don't know how to say that. He's Finnish.
Where's Ace?
He will be,
Ace, are you there? We need to bring Ace back in.
Can you play like a soundbite of him saying this when we edit this in? So he'll be playing for Finland. Wisconsin actually has three Americans, Ty Emberson, Keandre Miller, Sean Doogie, will all be on the preliminary roster. They
all
will
right.
cut a few players. The USA, all teams will, so there's no guarantee all these players will make it. Norris and Hughes are like a shoo-in to make it.
Mm-hmm.
Minnesota's got Sampo Ranta from last weekend. He was one of their wingers. He's playing on Finland. And then
he
Sammy
is
Walker,
on the team?
Yeah, he is going to be on the preliminary roster. And Sammy Walker, who is their third-line center,
and
I believe,
he
on the
was
weekend.
The guy you said was really fast last week.
He was
weekend.
Really fast. He yeah. Drove the net on one. We were both like, wow, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
He was the third-line center for Minnesota.
You're like, who is that? And I was like, I think it's that guy Walker you've been talking about. And you're yeah. like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Michigan's got aforementioned Norris and Hughes. Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Michigan State do not have anybody. I believe Notre Dame had a guy last year. Ohio State's had people in the past, but it just so shook out that way that, and there are no Canadians playing out of the Big Ten. It's just Finnish and Americans.
So there'll be other players, obviously, in college hockey, but just not that we may have seen in the Big Ten. So
right, and if you're a Red Wings fan, they do have four players in this tournament
outside of the ones we've already addressed.
Well, the Red Wings don't have any drafted prospects in the Big Ten right now.
Okay, right. Yeah, yeah.
So they have,
so it would be outside of those guys.
Jared McIsaac, who was their second-round pick this year, early second-rounder. He plays for Halifax.
Okay. In the OHL?
QMJHL.
QMJHL.
Yes. He's actually doing very well, so that will be exciting. I think he will feature on the Canadian team. They are pretty loaded. The Canadian team's essentially all first and second round draft picks. It's
wow.
an absurd roster. I think McIsaac will play. Joe Valeno was another one of Detroit's first round picks this year. He is a really excellent center. Plays for Drummondville right now in Quebec. He was actually here playing in Windsor a couple years ago in the Memorial Cup. If anybody happened to see that, he played for St. John at the time.
Okay.
So Valeno is tearing it up right now. I think he's got more than 20 points in his last 8 games in the queue. So he will be a heavily featured player for Team Canada. There is a Danish player, Malte Setkoff. He's a late rounder. Red Wings typically will have one of those guys. A few years ago, they had a Norwegian guy, the Swiss goalie.
Okay.
two years, actually, was a Red Wings draft pick. He will, I don't know if he is going to feature or not. He's just on the roster. And then the big dog is Filip Zadina for the Czech Republic. He plays for Grand Rapids Griffins right now. He was Detroit's top pick, I think 5th or 6th overall this year, which was a miracle that he fell to the Red Wings in the first place. He was supposed to go 3rd. So we're all very happy that the Red Wings picked him. He is doing pretty well in Grand Rapids right now. The Red Wings have released him for the tournament, and he will play for the Czech Republic. Last year, he was over a point per game in this tournament as an underager.
Wow.
He is in the running probably to be one of the top players of this tournament. He is going to light it up. So if you can watch him, you should. And then Michael Rasmussen, who was their 9th overall pick 2 years ago, did not get released because he plays for the Red Wings right now.
Okay.
That's a disappointment. But honestly, he's probably not even one of the 6 or 7 best players on this Canadian roster.
Oh, yeah.
They are loaded. So,
all right. Well, then let's have an overview of it. What is your kind of guess for maybe like the medals or who are going to at least make it to the medal round?
So first of all, the games will be on NHL Network, all the USA games.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think some of the Canadian games are, it's not just US only, so they will show other games. So if you are looking to watch, it will be on those channels. Typically, the US has done very well in terms of being competitive with Canada at this tournament in the past, especially this decade. I think they're at least 500 against them. Maybe a little bit better. So mm-hmm. their win-loss is in the preliminary rounds. They've won generally. They've beaten Canada for gold a couple times
mm-hmm.
in a shootout a few years ago. So they've done pretty well. This year, I don't expect as good of a showing. I don't think their roster is as strong as it typically is. I mean, they are bringing Jack Hughes, which is pretty awesome. They're bringing Oliver Wahlstrom from Boston.
Two guys
College.
That Michigan was in the mix for last summer, and we thought, hey, this if they get both those guys... Mm-hmm. Or if just one of them, yeah. but they end up with 0.
It'll be a solid second line, I believe. In the summer at the showcase, Hughes and Wahlstrom play together. The top line will be a couple OHLers and then a different winger. So the top line is going to be, as it was in the summer, Sasha Chmielewski from Ottawa and Jason Robertson, who's actually from Northville but plays for just got traded to Niagara. And
okay.
he's just dominating the OHL right now. So those two guys will be excellent first liners. Norris probably slots into the third line. the way it worked in the summer, probably into a shutdown role the way that he played at Michigan last year,
which is
excellent. It's
which
not
is
bad.
Good because for him, because that's probably what he's going to transition to in the NHL.
And to help this team, it does not mean he's the third best center on this roster.
No, but that's
it's
a role.
The best defensive player. He's probably the best defensive forward on the roster. And so it'll be exciting to see him in that. He had a couple goals in the summer showcase, a couple really nice feeds from Hughes. Quinn Hughes will probably be their 1 or 1A defenseman. The way they ran it in the summer showcase was Adam Fox from Harvard was also one of the big guns, and so they rotate a little bit. So their top two defensive pairs are anchored by those two guys. It's not always going to be Hughes because Fox is also extremely good. Don't know who his partner will be yet. I think one game he paired with Joey Keane from Barrie, who is I'm hoping for because he's also very mobile and fast, and it would be fun to see five forwards on the ice. USA actually did pull that off a few years ago when Werenski was on the team.
Oh, yeah.
Werenski paired with Anthony DeAngelo from Sarnia, and it was dynamite.
Huh.
They basically played with five forwards when those guys were out there. It was outstanding. So you get a sense of seeing some really cool stuff. It is an extremely high level of competition.
Yeah.
None of these guys are bad players per se. Like, they're all elite for their age group. This is a big deal for scouting because the sample size is really excellent for players playing against their peers. So they're only playing against other really excellent players. It's best on best. Speaking of best on best, the Canadian roster is worth noting. As we mentioned earlier, there were 10 first rounders in the entire NCAA. There are 17 first rounders on this Canadian roster.
That's ridiculous.
So if you get an idea of what this team is going to look like, that's why I think they're going to run away with it. Typically, like I said, United States is a little bit closer. This was a down age group for the NDP. It's cyclical. So, some years you're really great, some years you're not. Next year, United States will probably be favored, frankly, with this U18 group becoming the next 2 years, actually.
Because they're
U19.
They're under 18 teams really good.
Right. Yeah. So they will have 2 years of really, really great teams at this tournament. But frankly, right now, this is going to be Canada's time, I think. Like I said, 17 for first round picks. I had to count that twice because I didn't believe it. But they're going to be just stacked. They have so many centers that they're going to have half these guys on the wing. And they're going to have probably the 2020 first overall pick, Alex Lafreniere from Rimouski, which is where Sidney Crosby played.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's going to be the top pick in 2 years. So after Jack Hughes, it'll be
sure
him. And then they probably have the best junior goalie of the past decade, Michael DiPietro. It's not even sure that he's going to be starting, which is something else. He should have started last year. And he won the Memorial Cup for Windsor a couple years ago, and he is phenomenal. And that's where USA's advantage typically is against Canada's. USA usually has the better goaltending.
Hmm.
They probably will have very good goaltending this year. They are going to have someone we're familiar with was Caden Primo from Northeastern.
Yeah,
team.
Yeah, because I remember when we were previewing that Northeastern series last year, we're like,
this guy's
a freshman, right, last year and was
he's a sophomore
high-end.
Now, performing pretty well, not quite as good numbers as he was last year, but he's still very good. The other goalie who is going to be vying for time is Kyle Kaiser from the Oshawa Generals. He actually did play for Flint Firebirds back in the day. He is putting up astounding numbers right now in the OHL. Mm-hmm. I think he'll actually be the starter.
Okay.
He's having probably the best year of the three. And then the third goalie is Spencer Knight, who's on the U18s. We saw at Yost this year.
Right.
Is phenomenal. Going to be the best goalie top goalie drafted this year. But he's 2 years younger than everyone else. So it's going to be a big step for him to be like the starting goalie and dominate.
Yeah.
It's happened before in the past, but I would find it really surprising if he was to start over Knight or Primo. But they will have this kid for 2 years after this, and it will be wonderful. So
what are you expecting from the U.S. in terms of results?
I'm hoping they can medal. They don't play in Canada's group, so I think the other top team in their group is Finland. Finland should be very good. They have Kako, who's going to be probably the number two pick to Hughes.
Right.
Some other really great talent. Sweden is loaded this year. It's going to be a very tough tournament for the United States. Also, Russia's pretty loaded as well. Of the five top teams, I would place USA probably fourth or fifth, which is really unusual. They're usually a lot higher than that. I think it's just a little bit of a down year. But it'd be nice if they can medal. The key is in the preliminary round catching the good quarterfinal matchup. So if you win your group, you usually catch one of the bad teams.
One of the bottom end.
Right. So like
qualifiers.
A Slovakia or even sometimes like a
and then that puts you in the medal round.
Then you're in the semis and you've basically got to win one of your next two games to medal.
Right.
You got to either win both or one or lose one and win one and you get a medal. So getting that favorable semifinal round is, or semi or quarterfinal matchup is going to be difficult. It's possible, but they're going to have to do that. So they are kind of up against it, but I do think it's possible.
So you're, so if they get a medal, you walk away from this saying that was a successful tournament.
Especially this year, yes.
All right. And you said that starts on the 26th?
It does start on the 26th. The USA will play Slovakia. The other games are the 28th, the 29th, and then the 31st for the preliminary round. So they play four preliminary round games. Finland and Sweden are in the group, so USA is likely going to finish top three. The other teams being Slovakia and Kazakhstan. It would be really nice if USA could win that group, but Finland and Sweden are excellent. Finland's got an outstanding goalie. Sweden's got a pretty loaded back end, as they usually do. It's going to be tough, but it's doable. And then the medal round starts on the 2nd, I believe. So they take New Year's off and go right into 2nd, and then they do quarterfinals, semis, and finals.
And this is pretty much predominantly on NHL Network.
All the games will be on NHL Network, as it's been for the last few years. And it's great hockey. If you miss hockey over the winter, the Christmas break, you get to see some really good stuff. You know, you catch the GLI as well.
Yep.
But you get 7 games of really high-end competition going between Christmas and New Year's.
And you'll get to see, like I said, the Michigan's 2 best players. Quinn Hughes. Mm-hmm.
And they
Josh
will be
Norris.
Big players. They're not going to be role players. They're going to be
front and center.
They're going to be front and center. They're going to be playing a lot. And it's going to be, you'll get to see Quinn Hughes in his natural environment doing really great things. And Norris, will be in his best role as well. Probably doing really great things for the U.S. I think they've been very good in the past. They were good in the summer. And I think they'll be good in the World Juniors. It's out in Vancouver, so the game times might be a little bit weird, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, sounds good. Sounds like Michigan hockey, for the most part, is going to take a break. They'll have a little bit of a couple games in the middle, and then but they'll be the World Juniors, and then we will be back probably in the beginning of January after maybe some of that Notre Dame series somewhere around then. So Michigan's got a fun little tournament. The U.S. has a big tournament, and that's some couple things to look forward to over the next few weeks.
It's going
to
be a good holiday. Merry Christmas to everybody. Merry Christmas to you, Dave.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you.
Happy holidays
to
everybody.
Yes. All right. Yeah. And when at those get-togethers, just stay away from their sister.
Thank you for listening to the MGO HockeyCast. This is David Nasternak along with Anthony Ciotti. Oh God, the ties, the ties. Please, no more ties.